Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cindy S. Solomon with the Global Product Management Talk, premiere episode of Startup Talk Radio. I'm delighted to welcome
Dan Daskalescu.
I'm delighted to have Dan, who is the CIO of Blueseed, joining us to launch our premiere episode of Startup Talk Radio. It's the need for visa-free technology incubators and why seasteading is a viable solution. Silicon Valley is viewed as the nirvana for startups by international entrepreneurs for its unique combination of ideas, capital, and culture. However, our current United States visa immigration system does not allow for entrepreneurs from overseas to come here and test out their ideas in order to create new jobs and new companies. Dan is the CIO of Blueseed, which is a visa-free technology incubator for startups, and he's going to tell us about their plan of getting around the current issues with visas. He was born and raised in Romania and moved here to the Bay Area in 2005. He's an ex-Yahoo software developer, technical writer, web researcher, and knowledge manager with a broad vision of the tech arena. He's also a seasteading ambassador. He's connected with the open source and emergent tech circles. And prior to Blueseed, he founded the Quantified Self Forum, worked in satellite communications in Belgium, and co-authored and translated a number of IT books. Delighted to have you, Dan. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Cindy. I would also like to thank you for the introduction. It's pretty accurate. And a bit about Romania, actually, explains part of my motivation for being involved in Blueseed. I came here as a so-called H-1B worker, and even though Yahoo has applied for a green card on my behalf back in 2006, I'm still waiting for that green card to arrive, which showcases how slow the system is to absorb qualified high-tech professionals, which also motivates me to try to provide an alternative solution. And there have been some attempts to solve this high-tech skilled immigration problem, but they were of a political nature. And it's very difficult to move anything in the immigration arena politically because it's such a hot-button issue. When you say immigration in Congress, it's lumped with illegal immigration, with the people from south of the U.S. border. And even if you only want to specifically address skilled immigration or entrepreneurial immigration, there is a very little chance of success. And in fact, there has been an initiative called the Startup Visa Act, which was introduced in Congress almost exactly a year to date, so on March 14, 2011. However, that act has seen no movement at all. Now, the way Blueseed wants to provide a solution to this lack of a startup visa problem is by launching a ship in international waters right off the coast of Silicon Valley. So it's an entrepreneurial solution. It's literally thinking outside of the continental box of the U.S. And the advantage is that it doesn't need to pass congressional approval. It doesn't need to lump any other types of immigration issues into this solution. We specifically cater to foreign startup entrepreneurs who want to start or scale their venture near Silicon Valley. On the ship, we would offer a fantastic live-work-play environment, which has been called in the press the Googleplex of the sea, Googleplex being the headquarters of Google, which are rather famous for their decorations and their atmosphere that invites to creativity. So on this ship, the entrepreneurs live. They would rent a cabin, and they would have a workspace, common workspaces, as well as private offices, and they would be able to work, earn an income from the investments that they receive from their investors. And also, the ship being so close to the Silicon Valley coast, only half an hour by ferry, they would be able to take a ferry boat or a speedboat to the mainland and participate in upcoming events like the launch conference that I almost met Cindy at, or to visit their investors.
Excellent. So let me back up a bit here. The problem is Silicon Valley is really going into a talent drain. We're using up every available engineer, so it seems, and we really need to encourage international developers and talented engineers and scientists to come join us. However, we don't allow them to come in because the United States only provides a 3-month visa small companies, startups, they're really not set up to get around that. And the legislation is moving very slowly. So I suspect it's because it's not a big enough lobby behind pushing it through. So I really appreciate that Blue Seed and the Seasteaders have really thought not only outside the box, but outside of what might be viewed as limitations of land. It's a brilliant approach. It just seems like there's so many challenges that would be involved to make it a real thing. So my first question is, what's the timing on this?
We have a tentative launch date of the third quarter of next year. That is, if things go according to plan. In the meantime, we need to solve, as you mentioned, a number of challenges. For instance, finding a suitable cruise ship that's not going to break our ban. Conducting environmental studies, figuring out internet connectivity, and of course, spreading the word among foreign and also U.S. entrepreneurs. Maybe I should mention this. Surprisingly, 20% of the companies that expressed interest already in our ship, which means about 23 companies, because we have a total of 114 companies that want to be on the ship. So 20% of them are based in the U.S. They have no visa issues. What excites them is being in a fantastic environment with a lot of fresh ideas from all the other entrepreneurs that would be on the ship. So these are some of the challenges. We hammered out already immigration challenges and how the flow of paperwork would go for entrepreneurs. But as you can imagine, this is a large project. It would require a lot of coordination, establishing an entire supply chain that would provide everything from food to internet connectivity and electricity and fuel to the ship. So these things will take time, and our estimate is Q3 next year.
It's a huge logistical undertaking, number one. Number two, I'm thinking that it might, not only is it disrupting the current way of doing things, but might it actually create fear, or might government, United States jurisdiction, or specifically San Francisco, be against it?
Those are important questions, and public perception relationships with the authorities are our major focus at this stage. We do have positive indications, which I can mention, but not specifically because of legislation. Essentially, we spoke with local Congress people, persons from within the United States Immigration Service, and they like the idea because they do understand the problem of brain drain that you mentioned earlier. Indeed, for instance, many international students who graduate from U.S. universities are forced to return to their home country. They don't have an alternative other than getting a regular job. So if they have their own startup company, they don't have a visa to make that happen. So the Citizenship and Immigration Service understands that. They have an initiative called Entrepreneurs in Residence going on these days that tries to make it more streamlined for entrepreneurs to get visas. However, they can't do much because they are, again, limited by congressional law. USCIS is essentially on our side. Local representatives we've spoken with like the idea. The other challenges would be Coast Guard, and as far as we know, they would be friendly because, for instance, they could use our ship as a search and rescue operation platform or a refueling platform for their helicopters. Green organizations would be interested in us being as clean as possible, and in that regard, we plan to partner with clean tech and green tech startups to try out novel technologies in the area of, let's say, wave energy conversion. So by having a ship permanently moored in the ocean, we can be very well positioned to test all sorts of wave energy conversions and ocean thermal energy conversion technologies. In the environmental area, we also are pretty well positioned. Now, of course, there are people who worry that somehow we would steal jobs from Americans, but what one needs to realize is that those who create jobs are actually entrepreneurs.
If you're incubating new companies, those jobs don't exist yet.
Exactly. However, this has been difficult to convey for some reason. I think there is a knee-jerk reaction against foreigners of some sort. But as you mentioned, that's perfectly correct. If we incubate companies, these companies will grow, and the ship only has a capacity of 1,000 passengers. So where are they going to expand? they're going to move to Silicon Valley because that's where they have been building all these relationships while incubating on the ship. So once in Silicon Valley, they will create jobs, they will hire people locally. Plus, the entire supply chain that's going to supply the ship will necessitate probably a few hundreds of jobs. We already know that there will be skippers in our home port in California called Half Moon Bay that would like to man our ferries, for instance.
I'm talking with Dan, who is the CIO of Blue Seed. That's blueseed.co, BLUESEED.CO. And we're talking about bringing the boldest, brightest, most talented tech entrepreneurs from around the world to live on a ship anchored half an hour or 12 miles from Silicon Valley in international waters outside the jurisdiction of the United States. So you're really saying it's 12 miles from San Francisco, because Silicon Valley is actually, I think it expands every year what we mean by Silicon Valley.
Exactly. Technically, we have to be 12 nautical miles off the coast of California. 12 nautical miles means 14.1 regular miles, or 22 kilometers for our listeners outside the U.S. That means half an hour by ferry, which is the important part. You can get to the mainland rather quickly. Once you get to the mainland in the port I mentioned earlier, Half Moon Bay, it takes about 40 to 45 minutes to get to either San Francisco or the center of Silicon Valley, say Google or headquarters.
And on 280, which is a beautiful road. When I lived there, daily I would see rainbows over the mountains. It's just beautiful.
In the drive, it's gorgeous indeed. You get to see these reservoirs. And there is even a hobbit house. I haven't seen that anywhere else.
Yes. We used to call it the Flintstones house. It's up on the hills going north to San Francisco.
You also pass over the Stanford Linear Accelerator.
Yes, you do. That would be going south. Yes, it's a very... I'm also an immigrant to Silicon Valley, although I came from the New York tri-state area in 97 for the first boom. I do not take for granted how beautiful it is here and the beautiful climate, as well as the resources, the brain resources that you refer to.
Silicon Valley is a unique combination of resources of all kinds. You have the climate, which actually is important because it means people get out of the house, they just walk to restaurants on the street, and you can often bump into people that you met at some networking event. You catch up and you realize they have an opportunity for you. That has happened to us a number of times. And then there is obviously the resource of technical universities. We have Stanford, we have Berkeley, we have UCSF in the biotech arena. And these will provide a startup with very qualified engineers among the graduates, many of whom are international students also. You have a lot of capital. 46% of the venture capital in the U.S. went to Silicon Valley during last quarter. But 46% into an area that's perhaps, I don't know, 1% of the U.S. in terms of surface. Then you have the element of risk-taking and failure tolerance, which is rather unusual. We spoke with many entrepreneurs from Europe, for instance. First off, having a startup isn't considered a real occupation. You are told to get a real job. If your startup fails, then you might become the black sheep of your community. It's very hard to raise money again for a second startup. And you aren't encouraged to do anything entrepreneurial. For instance, we spoke with German entrepreneurs. The mantra is that once you graduate from a German technical university, you are supposed to work for one of the big German companies, maybe BMW, have a steady career path. You aren't encouraged to start your own company and disrupt anything. So all these elements exist in Silicon Valley. It's still unique in that regard. Attempts to replicate it haven't really succeeded. Not that we would mind that. And what we plan to provide is, let's say, la creme de la creme of Silicon Valley on a boat, or a Silicon Valley extension on the ship.
Excellent. Who are the prime candidates who would be attracted to living on a cruise ship that isn't going anywhere with 1,000 other people so they can work literally 24/7? Can you describe who you think your audience is and who you've already talked to that's interested in this?
If you think of two of the biggest companies in the internet sphere nowadays, they are Google and Facebook. And if you think of how they were formed, it all started in a university dorm. Google was started at Stanford by Sergey and Larry, and Facebook was started at Harvard by Zuckerberg. Now, the common element here is students, undergrads or graduate students, living in a dorm who are male. So that begins to describe our demographic. It would be software entrepreneurs. Most often they are men, but women have more widespread presence nowadays. Actually, there are many organizations like Women 2.0 or Women in Tech.
Thank you.
And these entrepreneurs usually are in their early 20s. They don't have kids. They can be married or single, but having kids on a boat would be a bit more difficult and would require a different set of facilities and safety mechanisms. Recipients would be young entrepreneurs without children nowadays at this stage, but who can be either married or single and have a product that can be developed on a boat, which includes many internet products, I mean, probably most of them, biotech, for instance, but less so more hardware-based operations, let's say a type of car development like that.
Right, hardware. It's hard to get funded. It's a whole other series of challenges to deal with in developing hardware, depending on what the scope of it is.
Exactly. I mean, small hardware like a new type of phone, for instance, or sensors, that's perfectly doable on the ship, even now tech to a small scale. But larger operations, maybe car manufacturing, obviously, that wouldn't really work. So software and portable electronics would describe
very mobile.
Mobile, exactly. Mobile, e-commerce. We have a number of industries. Anything that can be done online can be done on the ship. I get this question a lot. What about an engineer's spouse? Well, if she does anything over the phone or over the internet, like marketing, creative work, consulting, advertising, that can be very well done from the ship. We welcome everybody who is entrepreneurial and works on a startup or startup supporting venture. We honestly don't care about their origin or gender or age, anything of that sort. If you have a startup or if you help startups, for instance, by being an IP professional or a legal immigration counsel, you'll be welcome on the ship. We like to say passionate about work. Whenever they have free time, they go hack away on their products. That's the kind of person I want. The ship, however, would have a lot of play space and recreational facilities. One of the ships we're looking at even has a small soccer field on the top level. And, of course, we'll have gyms and massage rooms and the cinemas and theater. It will be pretty much a small village on the water.
To call it a Googleplex is appropriate because it sounds like you're emulating what Google has put together on their campus. So you'll have to add all those huge icons outside on the ship.
Yes, and the lava lamp. Google is our model because they managed to create this very good-looking space. It really looks...
And it's a blast when you're there. It feels to me like a Montessori nursery school, that there's everything to stimulate your brain on all sides.
Which is an important element. We are considering having a buffet style of catering as opposed to having to buy our own food, so that you can eliminate your worries about what exactly am I going to buy. You just focused on developing your product and everything with others. But you don't have to worry about all these daily mundane activities.
You don't have to worry about having a wife. And the other thing that's exciting is that you're opening up whole other ecosystems of support, from giving jobs to chefs to people outside of tech that are providing services to the people that would be on the ship. How many technologists and then how many support staff?
We indeed want to provide a full package. And since you mentioned chefs, we actually talked with one of the former chefs at Facebook. You'll be delighted to work on our ship. Compartmentalization of the ship is that we'd have 1,000 technology entrepreneurs and 200 support staff, including chefs and hotel personnel, because we'll have two rooms used as hotel rooms. Of course, engineers, the captain, security, anything you need to have aboard a cruise ship, essentially. So 1,000 entrepreneurs, 200 support crew. That would include higher-level services or, let's say, startup incubation amenities. For instance, I mentioned earlier, legal help with immigration or with patents, accounting, marketing, training programs. Those would be part of the 200 crew.
Excellent. So if you think about it as a campus, it seems extremely possible, except that you're adding the challenge of being in the middle of the ocean or not even that far out. I actually am 12 miles from San Francisco. there would not be a lot of traffic shuttling back and forth.
Well, we would have these daily ferries, and if you look at the San Francisco Bay Area, you have similar length ferries going from San Francisco to, say, Sausalito or onto East Bay, probably one of the local ferry providers. We spoke already with one such provider, and they would be able to take care of transportation back and forth.
Excellent. So if somebody is interested, how do they get on board?
The best way to get on board is to be referred to us by an angel or a VC that we know. However, bearing that, any startup is welcome to apply on our website. We have a startup survey that you can fill in. We're going to ask for some details about what your startup does, when it was founded, and how many people you want to have on the ship. And once you fill in an application, we'll get back in touch with the startup and figure out details as we approach our launch date in next year.
Because I think it would be an interesting experiment from many points of view. I'm thinking it's an interesting psychological experiment, but not different from what is occurring at Google, except there might be some other issues that arise from being an enclosed space.
Sure. I mean, it's not that you would be locked on the ship or anything like that. There would be a lot of daily traffic, people flowing in and out, investors coming to visit startups or other startups coming to workshops, talks, conferences. It probably would be a very interesting conference location. But other than that, you are free to go to the mainland for up to 180 days a year if you are a foreign entrepreneur. You just use your business or tourism visa, and you can spend time on mainland and come back to the ship. Of course, this hasn't been attempted before, so it will be interesting from a sociological perspective, see how people gel together, what sorts of synergies develop among the entrepreneurs and their support staff. It's very exciting.
Cost of people to be on board is quite reasonable. I think it's even less than accommodation at a college. You're talking about $1,600 United States dollars per person per month. That includes their office and their bed and breakfast and food and everything else.
The price you mentioned, $1,600, is indeed competitive with San Francisco, which was our measuring stick. In San Francisco, the average rent for a studio apartment is $1,750. Plus, you need to pay between $400 and $600 for a desk in a co-working or office space.
Right. Plus utilities, food, laundry.
Sure. On our ship, this price would probably mean a cabin shared among two. So we'll provide a range of accommodations designed for every entrepreneur's needs. You can share a cabin with up to three other people, and then you pay the lowest bound of our range, which would be probably $1,200. These are, of course, estimates. Or you can have a cabin with an ocean view and private bathroom and all those amenities for something closer to $2,500 or $3,000 a month, which is better than cruise ships, of course. For startups, we understand that they often don't have that much cash. So we are offering a package of a combination of rent plus equity. And this will be negotiable based on the stage of the startup. If they have more cash, they can give us less equity, or the other way around. If they are a scrappy new startup with just an idea, not much cash, they can give us more equity and a lower rent. Food would probably be included, but again, we need to evaluate that carefully because people have very different preferences. So we might have different packages, something like for an extra $150 a month, you get access to this buffet, or for the more upscale restaurants on the ship, you need to pay a somewhat higher price. We need to figure this out.
You might have a choice of food plans like they do on campuses.
Right.
What about the issues of taxes, the issues of once the companies start getting off the ground and start having income?
Everyone will need to be in full compliance with the law regarding their immigration status and taxes. Now, the ship will fly the flag of Bahamas, probably, or some other open registry country, which is a country that lends its flag to cruise ships. These countries are often Panama, Bahamas, Malta, Liberia. Once we decide on a flag, then companies that incorporate in the flag country will have to pay taxes according to that nation's laws, but companies on the ship are free to incorporate wherever they choose. And I believe this is an advantage because if they prefer the U.S. system, they can incorporate in Delaware. If they want to be incorporated somewhere else, they can do so. Sales tax would be something you have to pay to the California state at any time, and pay quite a hefty amount of that. given our entire supply chain. Imagine food for 1,000 people every day. That's a lot of sales tax for California.
A big issue is the intellectual property, the IP. So how will you deal with patent laws? Who will own that? And where will those patents be filed?
We will use the existing precedent in terms of patent law. And there are two bodies that you can use. The first one is the U.S. Patents and Trademarks Office, the USPTO. And you can file a patent with the USPTO regardless of your nationality. This is very clearly stated on the USPTO site. Also, you can use the WIPO, which is the World Intellectual Property Office. This gives you an international patent. So both these avenues are independent of where you are incorporated or where your headquarters are. So our ship will not break any new ground in this arena.
So would it be plausible for one member of a international team to be aboard? They may be collaborating remotely with a team that's situated outside of the United States.
Sure. In fact, remote collaboration and teleconferencing have been brought as objections to us in the form of this question. Well, why do you plan to launch an entire ship? Haven't you people heard of Skype?
Which, by the way, we're recording over right now.
We are, but if we were to negotiate you investing $1,000 in Blue Seed, wouldn't you like to meet me in person?
Absolutely.
So that is a huge point for startups because each of them needs investments. And the investors from Silicon Valley are very serious about being in close physical proximity to their startups for a number of reasons. One is that when you plunk huge amounts of cash into some company, you want to meet its founders and the team. And two is that you are supposed to help them along, not only with your capital, but with your knowledge and connections. So as an investor, you need to go to board meetings or connect your entrepreneurs with others in the ecosystem. And being in close proximity is very important for that. Plus, as a startup, you need to go to networking events, find the customers, have a lot of business meetings. And these don't really work over conferences, other remote means. I mean, I haven't seen anybody at the launch conference that you mentioned in the beginning talking to other people via a laptop from Skype. That doesn't happen. You need to have a physical presence. Will we invent maybe holograms or some other technology that is going to disrupt physical presence completely? You pretty much need to be where the action is. And in terms of the startup scene, the action is in Silicon Valley.
I agree. Proximity makes a difference. And all of the other means we have to interact digitally, virtually, they're add-ons and enhancements, or they may enable the conversation that would not have happened otherwise, but they're really the first step. They can't be the only experience. It's very hard to sustain a level of engagement, interact, and even deepening of a relationship if it's only through virtual means.
Right. I have seen studies on this aspect, actually. It turns out that being within less than one arm's length to another person boosts both people's levels of oxytocin, which is a hormone that enhances trust. And we all know how trust is beneficial to relationships. So this is hard biological evidence that physical proximity is important. Now, of course, you can have members of your team work in other locations on specific tasks, such as engineering or web development. And this means there is synergy between teleconferencing and being physically present here. But the physical presence is crucial.
What about seasickness?
Excellent. We thought of this problem very carefully, and there are a number of solutions. First off, we need a large enough ship that will be minimally affected by ocean waves. Our naval architects have run simulations on this, and it turns out that if you have a ship that's at least 500 foot long, then it will fare very well even in 8 feet waves, naval waves. So that's one solution, having a large ship. The second is we have very effective medication these days that's also quite inexpensive. One of these is called meclizine. If you take meclizine 3 days before embarking on a cruise, your chances of developing seasickness, if you are prone to it, drop from 90% to close to 10%. Then if you really don't like it, you go on the mainland and come back. So seasickness is something that you get accustomed to. Maybe you have trouble the first few days, but then you don't really feel it anymore.
So the good news is, if there is an earthquake, which we had one this week, a 4.0, right near the epicenter of it, It woke me up. But an earthquake would not affect the ship?
Correct. There are a number of advantages of being on a ship in terms of safety, surprisingly. One is that tsunamis don't affect ships. They only affect structures on the shore. Then there is no danger of earthquakes if you're on the ship. So Loma Prieta won't really touch the ship. Also, you live in a very healthy area in terms of air quality. You're in the middle of the ocean, that there's no pollution there. There's also no traffic. So it could be thought of as similar to a writer's retreat in a cabin to compose a poem or to write a novel. Except in this case, you probably would write softer.
Which is another discussion about whether that is an art form or not. I believe it is an art form, depending on the level of code that you're doing. So you don't have to worry about ice or pirates either.
Correct, there is no ice in this area. Maybe we'll launch ships closer to the North Pole in the upcoming years, but not right now. And pirates is a fun question, of course, but seriously, if they make it from where they live in Somalia, if they make it to our ship, we'll probably reward them with some ice cream, maybe packaged in a nice steel container.
Hackers might be a different issue. How would you provide for the security on many levels? The security of the connections, but also security of the, again, the intellectual property, the nature of the development that people are doing. It's good to be transparent to a certain degree, but what if people work on things that they don't want stolen?
Right.
The ideas.
Right. A general answer to all the feasibility questions in terms of supply chain, storms, seasickness, and all that is there are precedents. So we are going to use cruise ship precedents for many issues, security on board, supplying the ship. We are going to use intellectual patent precedents for securing ideas. As far as hackers, there has been some concern that we could host maybe illegal activities, but that's something we are very clear about. We are not going to allow on board any controversial business models. For instance, gambling or adult content, that's not something we are interested in. We only have so-called clean startups, and there is plenty of innovation to be done, for instance, in the mobile, local, social, and gaming space. And plus, hackers, if you are concerned about any sort of hacking activity, that really is independent of location. This can be done right now from China or from Russia. And being on the ship is not an advantage because we will control the network hub on the ship. Every communication will go through our networking equipment. We'll have firewalls, we'll have all sorts of rules and the policies that we can use to filter content and prevent malicious activity or respond to it. So hackers really have no incentive to be on the ship. They'd rather stay in Russia or China.
What about the environmental issues? Certainly you'd be creating a lot of waste that is not currently being created in that area. How will you handle the sustainability issues?
We have a multi-pronged strategy for that. There are ways in which you can tackle, for instance, waste management. One is you can deliver it safely to the mainland. On the trip back, supply vessels will do. So a supply vessel would bring, say, fuel or food from the mainland, and it would take back compressed waste. And we spoke with companies already that specialize in packaging waste securely and compressing it so it saves space and also doesn't leak any odors or anything like that. Another solution is to burn this waste aboard and extract some energy from it. So there are installations that are about the size of an industrial fridge that can burn waste at a surprisingly low cost because they use waste as part of the fuel to burn itself. We spoke with wastewater management companies that can provide filtration equipment. So there are many technical solutions to addressing waste. Again, cruise ships, that they do this every day and there are no concerns. And cruise ships have usually 5,000 people on the ship nowadays. Would be only a fraction of that.
How has the angel and VC community responded to this idea?
Since we are a very different startup, we haven't seen a lot of engagement from the community in terms of investing, but we have seen a lot of excitement. As in, we love your idea. We think it's great because it will promote innovation in Silicon Valley. It will reverse some of the brain drain, but it's not in our portfolio of investments. This is why we partnered with Peter Thiel, because Thiel is a different kind of investor. He finds highly disruptive and unusual business models to invest in. However, we do want to partner with the angel community and the VC community for Q1 curating the startups that come on board, because these people are the best positioned ones, the most experienced ones to estimate in the beginning of a startup's journey if they are going to become something big and interesting and disruptive and profitable. So we want to enlist the angel community to help us figure out who the best entrepreneurs are and who the most promising startups are to incubate on our ship.
Excellent. There was a lot of talk about the angel list during day one of launch. Or was it day two? Familiar with the angel list?
Yes, we have a profile on AngelList. AngelList has been somewhat useful to us in finding some connections. But again, we are not a typical mobile social local gaming startup, so we haven't seen a lot of cash pouring in.
Right, and it's an untried, untested venture, which is quite risky for many investors.
We have a comprehensive risk assessment strategy and risk response plan. And indeed, for somebody who first sees the idea, that it looks like there are a lot of challenges and many risks. But we've been working on it for about 9 months now, and we know exactly what we have to do once we close our seed round.
Why don't we step back a little bit, and Dan, tell us how you got involved with this.
Sure. As I mentioned in the beginning, I've been waiting for my green card for the past 5 years. So that gives me fuel for this blue seed fire. A while ago, I came across the seasetting concept, which plans to enable ocean communities. And I figured that ocean communities would be a solution to a wide range of problems. For instance, inefficient governance. What if you could have an ocean community of a smaller size where you could choose your own form of social governance and political system that would cater to you and people who share your ideas? Because a problem with large nations is that there are just so many people with so many different opinions that you can have a system to please everyone. But on an ocean community, you could have it be self-selected. You could even have a communist ocean community thrive. We could have people of any given orientation based on any criteria they want.
You're talking about communism as theory, not as practice.
Correct.
As a pure form, the ideal form of it.
Exactly. I don't know, it was long ago and was thought to work. And so if you apply ocean communities to the problem that has been bothering me for these past years, the lack of getting a visa, it turns out that you wouldn't need a visa in this community. Because a big reason for these visa regulations, why they are so intricate and complex, is that they've been laid out many years ago. So the immigration system is very antiquated. The concept of a startup appeared only in, let's say, the last 10 years as far as immigration is concerned. And the regulations have been put in place maybe 40 years ago, when to get a visa, you had to be an employee of a company the size of General Motors. And the titles like Chief Information Officer or Startup CEO don't mean anything to immigration officials. So by having an ocean community, it means you can bootstrap your own legal system. You can come up with rules that actually make sense without having to rely on all this baggage of existing law. That's how I became an ambassador for the Seasteading Institute. What Seasteading needed was an ocean community with a business model, because living on a ship or an ocean platform takes a lot of capital for maintenance and for supplying this platform. How are you going to get that sort of capital? Of course, you could get some benefactors like Peter Thiel to contribute initially, but that's not sustainable. You need a business model. And being close to Silicon Valley, we figured that we could marry this problem of work visas and this location of Silicon Valley and offer a unique solution. And this is how the idea of Blue Sea appeared.
Excellent, because you actually spoke to it when I first heard about seasteading. Out of context, I immediately thought that it was a wild idea and that whoever was involved with it were outside of the mainstream, similar to people who are survivalists. They're obsessed out of fear of the end of the world or some catastrophe. And so seasteading just seemed like an outrageous idea until Blue Sea puts it in context and actually makes it totally realistic and a solution to a problem that's happening now, not some future thing coming down the road.
Correct. If you think of seasteading carefully, it makes a lot of sense. The way I try to approach this as an ambassador is to figure out what are the governance pet peeves of a given person. Let's say somebody complains to me that they feel there's too much surveillance or there's too much censorship. And you're not going to escape from that in any realistic way, because you would need to have a revolution to overthrow the government, or you need to start your own nation, and there's no place to do that except on the ocean. So seasteading is a way to start from scratch, to avoid the existing problems and go forward with a system that could be a combination of the best parts of political systems from around the world. Let's say you like some legislation from the Netherlands and some from the US, you put them together. If they make sense, you can go forward with that. If they don't, you can adjust them. The cost of adjusting a political system in a small community is much smaller than the nation scale. And also, imagine if you have multiple systems, they can compete with each other. They can evolve. It would be pretty much like natural selection. If you apply the principles of evolution to systems in a number of iterations, you will end up with a very interesting political system that would serve its inhabitants much better than an existing one.
So there is that vision of utopia, or at least a technological innovation utopia.
Well, utopia has a connotation of impossibility, but seasteading is it's a path showing how such a utopia might actually come to fruition. Because evolution has led to all the advances that we have in technology nowadays. The main factor was competition, of course. So you had Apple competing with Android, and now we have very cheap phones that can do a lot of things that were unimaginable a few years ago. I mean, who would figure out in the 70s that you would have all the power of these supercomputers at MIT or IBM in your pocket? Competition and evolution and selection by the market has led to this innovation. Now, these principles, they clearly work. They have some downsides, some might say, sure. But what if we apply them to governance and to social systems? That hasn't really been tried before because, again, you need to have a place to try them, and such a place hasn't existed, which is why we want to use the ocean as a testbed for this new social technology.
And so you believe the time has come in Q3 of 2013.
That's the plan.
Brilliant. Dan, thank you.
Well, thank you, Cindy. I think your questions were very insightful. They touched on the most important aspects of BlueSeed, on how we are going to be environmentally friendly and how we are going to create jobs and innovation. Of course, where people can apply. They should just go to blueseed.com. Actually, that works as well as blueseed.co.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Yeah, survey for startups, right there.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Dan. This was an excellent premiere episode of Startup Talk Radio. We're really talking about innovation way beyond the box, really disrupting how things are done. I think this is an interesting idea for the sociologists and the anthropologists as well. I look forward to watching the development. And please come back and address the Global Product Management Talk community, where we would engage with the participants on Twitter.
I would enjoy answering questions from anybody who has an interest or a potential objection about the project, because it is very complex. There are some misconceptions, and I'll be happy to clarify those in the future time.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time. And so people can tweet you at DANDV. And also, I've put together a one-page collection of links, which I will tweet out and put on the Product Management Talk Facebook and G+, so people can get in touch with you to continue the conversation.
Thank you very much. That was my Twitter handle, or they can tweet to @BlueSeed Project, which is the Twitter handle of BlueSeed.
Excellent. Great. Thank you for your time. This is a very exciting idea. I'm delighted and honored to have you come on the program.
Thank you very much, Cindy. I'm happy we quite well met.
This is Cindy F. Solomon of the Global Product Management Talk, signing off for our premiere episode of Startup Talk Radio. Thank you to Dan, the CIO of BlueSeed. Please check them out and join us on Monday, where we will be discussing creating passionate users for your startup and products.